here at the Pleasance Dome, hence the slight echo going on here. I'm here with Pip Utton. Pip, what would you like to ask me?
Why are you here?
Well, we've been asking this yesterday. Why do we keep coming back? So that's a good opening question. Why are you back again?
I'm back again partly because I'm addicted to Edinburgh Fringe. It's for 3 or 4 weeks, it is the most exciting place in the world to be.
Okay, now, because we were talking about that, and so my answer to your question is there's a need to come back. But most people would say addictions are not a good thing.
Well, that's probably because I don't have any.
Right. But is there a good and a bad side to you needing to come back here?
Yes, there's a positive side. It gives some sort of shape to the creative year. It gives me a deadline to finish writing something new for. It gives me an opportunity to experiment for 27 performances in a row with something new. And it gives me the chance to end up at the end of the Fringe with something that I'm really pleased and proud of, that will hopefully provide me with an income for the next 5 years.
And you're here with 3 shows. One you're just doing a couple of nights that people have heard of, which is Adolf. And you're back also with a show that really was a big hit last year. And that particular show was not you playing an icon. So that was you going somewhere sort of newer, wasn't it, in terms of this isn't someone you've heard of, this is a play about something.
Yeah, because you've got to keep trying something different. I mean, I don't want to be just pigeonholed as playing historic characters, although if that gives me work for the rest of my life, then that's fine. But I think you've got to challenge yourself sometimes. It's why I played Margaret Thatcher, because that was completely out of my safety net, out of my, security blanket or whatever. And I think you have to do that. And also it had a personal resonance for me. Last year's play meant something very deeply to me and to my family.
And even in the title, which is pointing to the fact that a lot of people are now going to get a condition where at some point they're going to forget everybody around them, and that's seemingly happening to more people.
It's the biggest killer in England and Wales now. It kills more people than cancer or heart problems, and there are over 800,000 sufferers in the UK alone. And the frightening thing is there is no cure. We can cope with some cancers and we can cope with some heart problems, but there is no cure for dementia at all.
And that clearly resonated with people. And actually, at the Fringe, where a lot of people are here for entertainment purposes, a lot of people I've spoke to people that still were drawn to that because of that. So even if that might have been a play they might not have gone to, everybody knows somebody now in their family circle. Yeah. Where, and that's led to a necessary curiosity to encounter it, perhaps before it's going to happen.
Yes, and also I think that there's one thing. The strong plays and serious plays often focus on something that affects a section of the community or a sector of the community, whether it be, let's say, the rich or the poor or the homeless or people with 6 homes or immigrants or people who don't like immigrants. This affects everybody. That play just is no respecter of class, sex, religion, or position. It affects everybody in the world. It's as easy as that.
Now, your new show, a slightly cheeky question, but do you think, let's imagine there's an afterlife, is there a room up there, a kind of waiting room, as well as a victim support group, victims of Pip Utton, where Einstein was sitting a few months ago wondering, am I next?
Well, if there is, I hope he sends me a message to tell me who's in there with him, because I'd like to know who's going to be the next one.
Yeah, well, you pluck them out, and I think people would be curious to know how, of all the people that could be in that room, that you home in on, right, it's going to be that one.
Well, I do have certain criteria.
Okay, so right. You don't roll a dice or anything?
I don't roll a dice. The most important thing is after I've been researching them, I have to still be interested in them. But, and this might sound like false modesty, they have not to be beautiful, physically attractive. None of them have been sex symbols, generally speaking. I don't want to start trying to be something I could never be. The other thing is they've all got to have changed the world, whether for good or for bad. And the other thing is I have to be able to make my fat face look a little bit like them. And if I can do that, then they're in with a shout. But I mean, they don't always make the cut. I mean, I researched Ernest Hemingway for almost 5 years, and then ended up finding him the most boring person that I've ever researched. And so he's gone by the side. I thought about Julius Caesar, which I know is a very, very historical. But no, some things just don't make the cut.
In the case of this particular character, Albert Einstein, do you think that in the room, do you ever wonder about this, that people have seen so many kind of media representations that they're going to find it hard to see the Albert Einstein that you've researched? Then they're going to kind of have a filter of movie versions and even cartoon versions and so on.
Yes, but I think that one of the possibilities of how to get over that is to actually make Albert Einstein real. So then what they see, I hope, is their cartoon version coming to life, or even their film version coming to life and actually standing before them and speaking directly to them. So there's no attempt to be anything but to be Albert Einstein.
But the caricature is that he's a bit mad and he's just had an electric shock and his hair's all up.
Yeah, I'll show you the photo in a minute, and you'll see. Yeah. And yes, of course, you have to do the caricature, but the joy and the challenge is to turn that two dimensions into three dimensions, or in his case, four dimensions.
Yeah. Or maybe even 11 dimensions.
And I enjoyed that challenge. And doing the variety of characters means that all of them happen in a completely different way. But it is a very organic process. You know, it does start with, nobody can see on stage, because the trousers are quite long, that I haven't got socks on. But it's important to me that I haven't got socks on.
And when I saw Adolphus, which was quite a long time ago, what made it real for me, as you've already hinted at, was, there's so much film footage, but you didn't try an impersonation. We talked about this before. You did a portrayal, which is something else.
Yes. I'm not a mimic, and I'm not an imitator, and I have friends who are and far better at it than I could ever be. So it all sounds very actorish and that, but actually trying to inhabit the spirit of the person and bring it to life.
But there were elements, of tiny micro-elements of impersonation.
Oh, yes. There has to be. I mean, you have to walk like them, talk. Well, your hair has to have the same sort of angle, and so that there are things that you've got to copy. Else people would just keep coming up to you and say, oh, he didn't do that, or he didn't do that, or she didn't do this. And so those little details are what give it the rounded character, really. But what you mustn't do, I think what you mustn't do is make those little details the big details. They're only little bits of the character.
So when you did Adolf, and certainly when you did Margaret Thatcher, and you've been somebody in your own life who's had a real strong interest in politics.
Yeah.
Margaret Thatcher was an improvised Q&A, and you could draw on your own library of all of that. Have you got a theory of Albert Einstein?
I do have a theory, and it's not just to do with Albert Einstein, and I've often talked about this to friends. He had a theory that great things are achieved by single-minded people who have to protect themselves from deep, intimate relationships, lasting relationships with other people. And I think he's absolutely right. And I sometimes wonder, we all gather here in Edinburgh and we all get distracted by all sorts of things. If any of us, perhaps the ones that succeed the most are the ones who are so self-centred, I meant self-organised and self-focused, to actually cut out those distractions, to not let them interfere with their working. Now, I can't do that, which is why I'm always bumbling around at Edinburgh Fringe. And I'm happy not doing that. I don't want to divest myself of intimate personal relationships. But I do think it's quite an interesting theory of Einstein's that I can empathise with.
But coming back to when you've done your research into politics, you already had a lot of knowledge.
Yeah.
There. And actually, when I saw you do Roy Orbison, you clearly had gone into his biography.
Yeah.
How far have you gone into the mathematics and the physics to be able to realise Albert Einstein on stage?
I've gone into them far enough to realise that I'm not clever enough to understand them. I do, in the show, explain relativity and the famous equation, and I understand how that equation came about. But if you can understand what that equation means, and if you can understand the mathematics, then you are a physics master, a mathematical master. We must never forget that what he did is theoretical physics of the highest level, of genius level. Now, it's completely understandable that most of us won't understand what he did, how he did it, the symbols, the equations, and I don't need to. I just dread a physics professor turning up in the audience and pointing out that I might have got the speed of light wrong.
But also, I love the idea, you know, and the film has done it for a long time, that we don't need to go into it to imagine it. And so I love the idea that the hour long is going to pass by objectively, and yet for somebody it's going to go by very fast, and hopefully not too many it's going to go by very slowly. And if on a distant star someone put a telescope and could get the light of your show, you're actually going to see dinosaurs at the moment. You know, you're putting yourself in a mix. But I suppose, is there a level then that you're satisfied with saying, I've got the character, even though I haven't got everything that's in his head? Whereas I did sense when you played Margaret Thatcher that you clearly had access to just about everything.
I don't think I've ever inhabited a character as much as I did Margaret Thatcher.
Right.
I mean, I could have answered questions as her about things I didn't know anything about. It was as easy as that. I think I'm into the character of Einstein without being into the knowledge of Einstein. And I never will be into the knowledge of Einstein. Most people won't. But I know far more about it than I did 2 years ago. But I still stumble over quantum physics, as Einstein did right until his dying day, even though he was the father of it. He's got a lovely quote, and he says that, you know, the only difference... No, let me get it right. It's, we all know that light travels faster than sound. That is why some people appear bright until they open their mouths. And I think once you can understand that he said that tongue-in-cheek, but meaning it, then you're into the character of Albert Einstein.
And there's so many great quotes that are not scientific from him about life. One little challenge question before we sort of come towards the close of this interview is, if I look at your canon, and certainly, you know, we've talked a little bit about politics occasionally, have you got a zone of discomfort you've yet to go into, which is you played politicians, you played musical, you know, figures, and you've certainly played scientific figures. That's a kind of a realm of quite the rational. Do you avoid playing the religious or the spiritual?
No, and I can point out, it's never been seen in the UK, has it been seen? I don't think it has. I do a Pope called... a play called Popes, which I delve into the history of popes.
But they're still quite rational.
Well, they might be today, but let me tell you, there were some weird buggers.
Right. Okay.
But no, I don't want to offend. That's not my job.
Yeah.
And there are things that I feel deeply that I don't want people to know what I feel.
Okay.
I think it's important that I don't preach. I do want...
And to put yourself to the test, I'm not going to out your politics, but you proved that with Margaret Thatcher.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's perfect for me.
Yeah.
The things that I feel deeply about, I want to keep them private and to myself. And there are some things that would even hurt my nearest and dearest, and I'm not going to do that because they are my nearest and dearest.
A final question. I've asked you this before, but it was a long time ago, but I think there might be a fascination about audience and younger theatre makers here, newer theatre makers, that you're here at the noisy fringe, the busy fringe, and you have three characters. I know they're on different days, but puppeteers have sometimes told me how important it is to put these things back in the box and not take them into the bar afterwards and in order to get good sleep. Do you find it easier? Do you have methods of being with these three characters and being able to put them away and just be Pip, you know, here too? Or do they haunt you a bit?
No, they don't haunt me at all. They inhabit my dreams before I get to the fringe, because I'm obviously worried about performance. But after performance, I get out of characters so easily. First gin and tonic, and I'm back to being the old lush I normally am. Yeah, it's as easy as that.
Also, is that important?
It's very important. I think it's part... You know, I'm not a trained actor, but I do think it's part of an actor's job. I mean, you can't carry these characters out. And I have no... I really don't have any time for people who... You have to be Macbeth for 24 hours a day in order to play him for 3 hours in the evening. You know, that's not right. That's not acting. That's sort of self-obsession, in my view.
And, you know, anyone listening, if you go and see any one of these three shows and you come out shocked and affected, don't be surprised to find Pip Upton, you know, heading out 10 minutes later off to the bar or wherever as Pip Upton.
Yeah, that's how it should be.
Yeah. Pip Upton, thanks for talking to Fringe Review.
Thank you.